Management Advisory Committee. I appreciate all the attendance from the committee members as well as members in the audience. It's 5:40. We're at VMRC, and we're going to start the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee meeting. Jim?
All right. We also have Dan on the, Dan Dyes on the line, so we have one more there. This is a normal meeting that we have in the summer to try to get ready for the fall harvest season. I just guess some of you saw the some of the press releases came out, but that's the harvest that we have now. We're over 500,000 bushels for the first time in a long time. But I mean, primarily what we're talking about today are the public harvest, which we did better on that last year too. 213,000 bushels of reported harvest so far. But so you know, we've had several good years in a row. We've kind of gotten in, as far as setting the seasons, we've kind of gotten into a pattern because we have three big areas that we're rotating, so we know where they're coming. And in most cases, you know, the compromises that we have on the season times have been, you know, pretty well accepted. What we are recommending just on these seasons that's entirely different is that adding two months, a month each, in two different places. We're separating out the seed harvest because every year they end at the same time, the market harvest, seed harvest. Since we have a quota for the seed, we're adding an extra month in May for harvesting seed after the market season goes out. We usually do that anyhow on request, but we're going to go ahead and put it in the season lengths. And then on Seaside, adding an extra year. The harvest is very small on Seaside. It's all by hand. The reporting is not very good, but it's pretty consistent every year, around 1,000 or 1,500 bushels. So it doesn't seem like adding an extra month there is going to be any problem. So that's two differences that staff recommending for this year coming.
Adding on to the seed season?
Adding on the seed season a month, yeah.
Hasn't it always been through June 1st?
No, we've been stopping at April 30th, and then if we get requests, we'll add it on. Add some on. But The three areas that we're rotating that are set about the same as last year in the Rappahannock, area one is down there, Broad Creek. That one is one opening first. That'll be October 1st, and then that'll be open for 2 months. And area six, which is up around Urbana, will open November 1st, and that's 2 months too. Generally, what we've seen in stock assessment, and this goes pretty much for all the areas, is that this year is probably going to be a little bit better than last year in most areas. Because we had a real good set in 2010 and 12, we got for these one like the Broad Creek, you got both years in there, so there's actually quite a few orchards in Broad Creek. There's not so many in Area 6 just because we don't get a great spat set up there. I mean, but we have as much as you can expect. And there'll be some there, but it won't be nearly as much as there is in Area 1. And of the six areas in the Rappahannock, Area 6 always has the lowest amount because you really need to move seed in there almost to get any quantities of orchards.
Jim, didn't y'all plant some at the Hog House there in Area 6?
We did last year.
Number years, right, okay.
Those are all been caught up last time we were.
Okay,
that open.
2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're proposing to open that November 1, Area 6?
Yeah.
So there'll be overlap between Area 1
and
Area 6.
That's the same we had it last year. In the Rappahannock, they overlap each other so that the those rotation areas last from October to December. Other areas of the Rappahannock just come in behind them. There will probably be as many orchards in 7 and 8 as there was last year, because we had right many small orchards, but 2011 and 13 were really bad spats that year, so we had very little. So we next year will not be so good in probably any of the areas, because we will have 2 years out of three that they've had low spat sets up the bay.
Mm-hmm. So, Jim, you are opening 7 and 8?
Yeah, 7 and 8, just like they were last year, staggered.
Okay, January, December, January. Okay.
Yeah.
So next
December,
year,
January, February. Yeah.
Next year would be 3 and 5?
Next year will be 3 and 5, right. For the Tanager Pocomoke, Area 2 is opening this year. That's the area that's California and Thoroughfare, primarily the two rocks that are opening, and then Area 2 for Pocomoke Sound are all the upper bars, and they actually have quite a few orchards on them from the 2012 set that will be market size. There will be more orchards in Area 2 this year than there were in Area 1 last year, so should be a good season there. And those seasons are the same as they were before. The York River, we had intended to go into a rotation with Area 1 and 2 in New York going to the Mobjack. But this is what we see going on in Mobjack. We just cannot seem to get it to bounce back from where it was in the mid-2000s. We planted shells, but we've just not gotten good spat sets. And maybe something will change this year, because we had some new shells we put out there last year also. So we're recommending that we go back in the York River, and just do a 2-year rotation where we go back to Area 1 for this year's season. That area has got more oysters than Area 2 had last year, because it had good 2010 set, and most of them weren't caught in 2012, and then we got some set again in 2012. So Area 2 may not be so hot next year, but Area 1 this year will be okay.
When are you proposing that to open?
That's the last season that we open up for the New York, opening in January and February, just like it was last year.
And Tanger and Pocomoke opens when?
December through February for Tanger and Pocomoke.
So, Jim, Mobjack Bay, you're not proposing to open that at all?
No, give it another year, see if it'll rebound.
It's a mystery, because really in the East River, I mean, good oyster, you know, it's a lot of oysters up in the river, you know, but at the mofo, it doesn't seem to do as well. I don't understand it. It's been, 4 years since we worked that? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there had been some oysters there.
Yep.
But
we done good 4 or 5 years
ago.
Yeah. Toe steak, same way. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we planted some out at Brown.
Mm-hmm. Brian's
Bay too.
Okay.
Haven't got any great set out there either. So.
Yeah.
Maybe. Of course, we've had 2 years out of three that spats have been low, and actually 2012 in Mobjack was not good. So
okay.
That just has missed everything recently. Been some up in the Tribs, but not out in Mobjack Bay. Great Wicomico is scheduled for the same as it was last year, December and January. There are more in the Great Wicomico this year. We had some small orchards taken away last year in the Great Wicomico, but we had a fairly good crop of small orchards that should make it to market size this year. So, and then the rest of them are just the little Hantong areas up in the Northern Neck and way up the Rappahannock. We actually planted seed in the Rappahannock on bowlers this year, so there's a little bit more there for Hantongers. And we planted seed in the Yocomico this year, and we still have the seed that we planted in Nomina the 2 years before that. So there are a few areas for the Hantongers to work up the bay.
But, Jim, are any Hantongers working up there?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
A lot at Nominot. Yes.
Okay. I mean, up in area 8, 9.
You know, they'll stop. There just has not been anything. That's why we put seed there this year.
Okay.
You could not catch enough with the hand pollen.
Okay.
But there should be, you know, start working on those this year.
Mm-hmm. Patent Tong, Deep Rock, is that going to be open?
Same as okay. That's December through February. Now, when we left off in the spring, you know, we got into the discussion on effort, and this is just the updated graph on the expansion that we're seeing in especially the hand scrape, which is the yellow mustard-colored bar there that is going up really, really fast. Now the hand scrapes are catching 65% of the harvest, hand scrape and dredge together 82% of the harvest. Got about 420 hand scrape licenses, and we have $627 $300 user fees. So that's the potential out there for 627 people to get limit, the bushel limits. I mean, if every one of them worked, that would be 38 days of work per license. So it's definitely getting up where those that are trying to stay in this for the long haul is more people than there should be. And a lot of that's because of the crabs being so poor that guys that used to crab, you know, at least not come in and get an orchard fishery in October and November are now sitting there October 1st and ready to go into orchards. And it's causing a lot of pressure. And we went through some of these things at the last meeting, but I would use this for the commission, just showing them what differences in a scrape and a dredge. And that's the figures I just gave you on the percentage that everybody's catching of the total harvest. And we went through this at the last meeting in the spring, and you know the different ways that you have options to reduce effort. And one of the things that we said we would go back and do is that we would look and see if we could make something out of the mandatory reporting, and if we could get to some sort of way of controlling licenses or something. But what we found out is the mandatory reporting is, even though you got the total numbers, trying to figure out who's doing it with the different people on the boat, because captains report for a boat and it's not always clear who the helpers are, that it's very hard for us to try to dividing up what we have the harvest amongst everybody. And because of that, we want to start this year doing something different with the orchard fishery, and that's requiring every harvester to report their own limit as opposed to the boat reporting 24, that however many people were on the boat, it's 16 or whatever it is, that each person would report their eight or however many they caught that day.
Mr. Chair.
So we can start get some idea of yep.
On the buyer side of that, would the buyer issue a ticket to each individual on the boat?
What do you mean by that, Jeremy? We're also gonna
because this audit's gonna that audit's gonna correspond right. On mandatory reporting with a buyer audit.
Every harvester has a sheet to give the buyer. So that's one record right there. When the harvester puts down his form to come to us, should be given the buyer copy of that as well. The buyer should have on record what it is he sold.
A recommendation as a buyer of multiple locations would be to re-adopt the 53 form. I'm not going into it, but you need some sort of common form, buyer to buyer, waterman to waterman, that can be matched up, as opposed to a slip of paper or nothing, a check stub, what have you. I don't know how some watermen would keep track of what I see they get from a buyer as far as trying to keep records. But I would consider a standard form so a waterman's got something he can match up. Typically, they sell multiple buyers in a season, depending on the geographic location, that they could have some sort of standard to what they were doing.
I've got a question I want to ask you about that too. But I know for me, for all the oysters that I catch off of my beds, that, you know, I fill out the harvest report on what's caught on that bed each day, and there's a column in there where you put who was on the boat, and I submit that. That's not what you're telling me. That's not sufficient.
If they have a card of their own and a user fee of their own, they need to report on their own. Well, I mean, if they're just working as just a helper, that's not.
Well, they're harvesting off my bed, sir.
Yeah, your bed, private. We're not talking about private.
Okay,
now.
Okay.
This is public.
Yeah, good enough.
Public, not private.
Good enough. Yeah. I understand.
Jim, still with maximum 24 bushels per boat?
We'll get to that. But, I mean, I want to go through these, why we didn't do effort, because we had talked about, you know, possibly just some way of reducing the number of people. Mm-hmm. And at this point, we don't have the data to do that. And so the two things that we're going to start is the individual reporting, and the other thing we're recommending is that that we set a control date of July 1st, 2014 that says that if you get a license after that date, that you won't necessarily be included in calculations in the future, at the same time that we'll be using the better reporting, hopefully, that we can start coming up with systems down the road that would cut back on the number of licenses.
Is that a de facto limited entry?
No, not yet. No, right now you can go get them now.
Yeah, but I mean down the road.
Down the road, it would be some sort of entry system, yeah. If it continues to go the way it is now. I mean, it's going to become a real issue next year because we know the standard stocks are going down next year, and we'll have to deal with something to control that. So. Now, since we don't have the option of reducing the numbers, we have to, you know, do things now in place of that. And one of the recommendations that we have now is to actually shorten the day to 12 o'clock we're only talking about here the hand scrapes and the dredges. We're not talking about the Patentong, Hantong, any of those. And we're talking about the 82% of the harvests that are coming from these two gear types.
Hey, Jim.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to go through all of these and then take questions, comments, or do you want to take questions, comments as we go through?
We could do either, whatever.
Why don't you go through everything and then we'll...
Okay.
Have a discussion.
Be fine.
What's the percentage you're trying to reduce the catch by?
Well,
by hour.
At this point... You know, we knew we had some problems last year with people getting two limits. They would sell one place, then go sell somewhere else. So the 12 o'clock kind of shortens that opportunity to do that. It's relatively easy to enforce, and it just puts people on the ground for a shorter period of time towards the end of the season. Beginning of the season, I mean, you rarely see watermen staying beside, beyond 12 anyhow, right, with these gear types. But there are a few that stay, especially as the season drags on and days is less out to the catch, and they'll stay to the entire 2 o'clock. But it is not very many that do that.
Can I go back to the control date?
Yeah.
One thing. There's nothing that goes along with that. It's just a control date.
That's just a control date. Just putting it in the regulation now that July 1st, 2014 is a control date, and if you buy a license after that date, you're taking a chance.
So. Well, what if you didn't have a license in the 2013-2014 season, but you had one the season before that and the year before that?
Right now it's open, so you could get one. But
yeah, but does the control date affect that?
Yeah, that's what I'm...
Hold on. I know what you're asking. So the way the control date works in most fisheries is you look at the control dates back on history. So if you have history in the fishery, licensing history, harvest history, you're captured. It's those who are the brand new entries,
right,
who don't have any records at all, have never been here before. They're jumping in, well, because we have such a good year going on. They're jumping in fresh now to take advantage. Because some of the rest of y'all suffer through to get to. That's what the control date is used for, if it's chosen to be used.
Right.
All this is putting it in place, yep, of the tool, if you choose to use it as a tool down the road.
Okay.
That's all.
That's what I'm curious about. Thanks.
Second thing that I was recommending is, and this kind of came from the last meeting that we had in March or April, whenever it was, is that we lower the vessel amount to 16 from the 24 as a way of shortening the day also. Usually the ones that were staying late were the 24, the three-man boats that were getting 24. And what we've seen is, I mean, I think we're pretty much as far out as we're going to get on the number of boats. And the difference between the 420 and the 627 that have user fees, a lot of those have been people that have just been picked up to come in and get an extra limit on a boat to get to three limits on a boat. And we're recommending that you know, is a way of, again, shortening the harvest day, make the resource lasts a little bit longer, and we don't think it's really going to increase the number of boats that are out there.
I think it is, Jim. I really, really do. I think there's one person on the boats instead of three limits, the two boats. All they're going to do is get another guy to go with them, and it's going to put more pressure because there's going to be more boats on the oyster ground. I really believe it.
When you look at our vessel reports,
uh-huh,
it's a very small percentage. It's less than 20% of people that have to.
24.
So there's not but so much, mm-hmm, they can jump in there.
Yeah.
And right, put more vessels. The other thing, at least we've been discussing and we'll talk about today, is as you know, last year, after a lot of debate, we went to using baskets from the way it had been with the pile. Law enforcement had issues in certain places with abusing the privilege of using a basket, and that there was some segregation going on the boats where small oysters would be put in some baskets, marketized in other ones, and if law enforcement approached, they were just dumped overboard. Yeah.
I would like to go back to this reduction in the effort and whatnot on the, before we jump into this next one, since I was assuming we were taking comments and questions.
All right. Well, these are all, I mean, I was going to go through it all and then come back to it. We can.
He's just going to identify them. You go back to anything you want.
Huh?
Good enough.
You want to go back there?
No, go ahead. I'll get
just
you.
Just finish it up. I mean, just finish it up and then we can get into it.
Yeah, that's right. So at this point, we've at least offered up the suggestion that we go back to try. It's going to really be important for us this year to try to protect small orchards, since we know we had poor spat sets two out of the last 3 years. And every one of those small orchards that goes away this year is going to be stuff that you're not going to have the following year. So, you know, if we can do something to cut down on the small orchards that go out, if this helps, that's at least a suggestion at this point that it may give us some control by keeping the pile so that at least as law enforcement approaches, you can check to see if the orchards are there. And then the last thing that we're having to incorporate into the regulations are that we have a new FDA ISSC requirement that every harvester has to be certified for shellfish harvest safety by 2015. And in order to get your 2015 harvest license of any kind, you're going to have to take this education course. This education course is on our website. It's a 45-minute course. If you sit down and you run through the PowerPoint, once you get done with it, you hit the button and you're done with it. We also have on our website advertisement for some places where they're letting you come as a group if you want somebody else to push the button for you. But it's a very simple course, but it's a requirement now that if you get any sort of shellfish harvesting license, that you'll have to take this safety course.
What's that address?
Huh?
What's that website address?
Just Google BMRC. And then on BMRC, you go to commercial fishing and then to shellfish management. And it's the course is right on there. So if you have people working for you that, if they have a harvester license, just a aquaculture harvester license, then I'll take the course in order to get it in 2015.
And this would be for hand tongers?
Everything.
Anybody?
Clam, oyster, everybody. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So is that everybody that's on the boat, or just have?
If they don't have a license, they don't have to do it. I mean, it's good information, and
you may want
to sit down and look at it. If you're worried about them, explains why we do the warm water restrictions that we do.
I understand all that. I'm just saying you have people on a boat that don't necessarily have an aquaculture license.
If they don't have a license,
they can be on the boat and do what they do, but they just, I just wanted to make sure that was okay.
But even if they're getting the $5 license, they have to get it. So those are the recommendations that I sent to the commission to advertise yesterday. I mean, we can certainly consider similar things if you want to, but our effort is definitely increasing. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We are 627 people is a lot of potential limits out there. So if we want to go back over any of those, we can.
Crab dredging.
Huh?
Got to open crab dredging.
You're proposing no baskets and all the oysters in a common pile with the allowance of one basket for measure?
One basket for measure, yes. That's the way it had been the year before.
Yeah. And you want to go back to that?
Yes, I would just, on this reduction of effort, being as you just put it, this is a fishery that is getting further exploited because of the downturn in the crabbing and whatnot. My question and my recommendation from looking at this would be to leave things in this season as they are, because it's a 60 to 90 day window for someone to make a living. And certain areas, of course, they can go from area to area if they so choose. But we are micromanaging this resource during this 60 to 90 day period that we're letting get, for lack of a better way to put it, pillaged for the rest of the year, and not taking any of that into account on this stock assessment or anything else. So why take away from the honest man who's trying to make it through the winter and make it to next spring to start doing something else, and leave it there for the taking for anybody else during the rest of the year? Because everyone that is around the oyster industry, in the oyster industry, knows that larceny is currently a major problem. And we're not managing that. We're managing the guy that's out there trying to do right and trying to make a living every day. Go ahead.
Just what does somebody have to do in order to lose the privilege of being able to participate in this hand scrape program, if anything?
Two tickets a year?
You can't remove anybody.
I mean, right now, it's open.
Not like all them boats that went over and caught the polluted oysters and the people that are redundantly getting caught doing stuff they're not supposed to do that you can't.
You can revoke their license.
Yeah, we are revoking licenses on people we're catching, and that goes for all sorts of, I mean, that would be, if they get caught on private doing wrong, you're taking away their license to do any fishing or any oyster license.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are a little bit of headway being made with that.
You can, there's code law that's been around for a while that allows the commission to, without notice and without a hearing, to suspend license. Is that being used?
After conviction.
So no. after the fourth conviction?
After a conviction.
After a conviction.
Yeah. It used to be two or three.
It used to be a three-peat, what we call a three-peat for law enforcement, where they would bring cases after three violations and resource violations, any resource violations. So now, the proposed section 282-232, if you get a chance to look at it online, that is used, that gives a two-year revocation. From the time of the commission meeting, again, they have to be found guilty in court. It's a two-year suspension of not only licenses, but now privileges. So they can't be doing anything for 2 years. Then we have a code section 28.25.28 that law enforcement is able to cite violators on their hand. That can be just, they get a letter saying, you're revoked. Talk earlier today, we're going to try and make sure that we can also get it to where not only licenses, this is all licenses, not the first licenses, but also the privileges under that statute. We hope the General Assembly will pass that through to get a person who makes those violations not able to do anything. That's a little different. That goes from as little as 6 months from the court conviction up to 2 years. There's plenty out there. We have four cases. Originally, the first four cases that appealed, they did successfully appeal. Other cases are pending. There's some stalling going on sentencing dates, things of that. But it's a work in progress, a good work in progress, because the courts are now seeing that this is not just a trivial thing. But that takes time to get there. That's how you get out of any oyster harvesting at all. You do it that way. So we invite more and more to come to the commission, quite frankly, and I think law enforcement has been working hard to make sure that happens.
And I do understand your point we all understand your point on the poaching and the fact of that the honest guys pay for this with more restrictive regulations. I mean, it's not, we don't not understand that.
So yet again, the honest guy gets penalized.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the honest guy gets penalized, to sum it up.
Yeah.
Robbie, did you have a comment?
Yeah.
528. Yeah, 232, they need to appear before the commission.
Yeah.
521 says on the testimony of an officer at a hearing who has personally observed a person having dredge cable or dredging equipment overboard in any way when engaged in dredging in an area other than where a person holds a lawful permit or license to dredge may revoke all permits and license held by the person to dredge on public or private ground and may refuse to issue any license or permit for such purpose for the period of 1 year. That's on the testimony of an officer. That's 521.
I'm not familiar with that being used, but...
we usually don't use the 21, this is a problem, why aren't we using...
What was your...
each one has a use that they become pretty powerful.
adjudicated in a criminal court, which was beyond a reasonable doubt. In legal terms, that's way better than a civil case, which would be before the hearing, which is a preponderance of evidence. It's called the 51% rule versus the 90%. So therefore, when you get a revocation or something like that, you can still appeal at the circuit court in which you reside in. When you go to the circuit court in which you reside in and say, hey, I lost my license, the MRC took it, but I adjudicate, they lose, when it was adjudicated in low court, I got it dismissed. The high court's automatically going to say, well, you should have took the license because he was adjudicated as dismissed. So even if you do it, you're going to kind of do this process for virtually nothing. Now, you think that you can take the licenses while they're convicted, right? Well, actually, you can't. Upon appeal, they get the licenses back, which we found out in the last case that we just did. So once they do the appeal, they're going to get the licenses back until it goes to the circuit court with respect to respective jurisdiction. So the 28-1 and the 5.1 code doesn't have as much teeth as the other.
No, it's accurate. That way, it doesn't. But it's an expense other than it's an expense that means convenience. Not if this is a problem of magnitude. This is a problem of great magnitude, and any tool that could be used to either cost the perpetrator of the crime more money or inconvenience, to me, looks like it would be
a you're absolutely right on that one. I mean, as far as great inconvenience would be on the perpetrator or the defendant, so to speak. However, that burden also falls upon the commission and the law enforcement division, considering we are then taken into a case that we're not going to have very much success in, and we're taken out of the field, which is already, we're cut short as it is, and we're spread to the sand, which, you know, everybody's very well aware of it. So when you take my guys out of the field and put them in court three times longer than what they normally are, well, they're in the field even less. So, yes, we want cases to stick. We come here before the commission, we want them to stick the way they are, we want them to stick in court. We work with the prosecutors very well to get convictions to start. If we couldn't get a conviction on it, it wasn't because we didn't look at do our homework or anything like that. There was something there. So, yes, you can use the 21 code, but you have the debt stacked against you to start. The only one that's really losing is the law enforcement's ability to go out there and do it what there is that they're supposed to do, which we get many complaints all the time. The guy's not here. They're not there. If I fill the courtroom full three times more than what I have to, they're not going to be there even more.
Any other comments?
Yeah, I would like to make a motion as a member of the committee that none of these control dates, none of this be adopted until VMRC finds a proper method and as strict of a procedure to control the larceny as they do to control the honest man trying to make a living.
I'll second that.
Any discussion on the motion?
Which issues are you voting on specifically?
The control date, the individual mandatory reporting, the vessel limits, and the daily time limits. As ways to reduce effort in that hand scrape fishery.
I agree with you 100% on the honest guy versus the crook, because, you know, we need to do something to reduce the problems that we have in Virginia. We have a lot of them in Virginia right now. I don't know that it's maybe advantageous to the fishery to wait another year to at least look at some of these. You know, I'm not disagreeing with anything you said, because I think you're 100% right. But at the same time, you know, we need to move ahead, I think, and do something to address some of these potential problems. If Jim is, you know, Jim does surveys methodically across the state, and he's certainly saying that we're not going to have the oysters in, I guess, the fall of 2015, that we're going to have the fall of 2014. So if that's the case and we have more people in the fishery because we didn't take action, then the honest guy is really going to suffer. You know, the boat limit, I heard, and we don't buy a lot of oysters directly from watermen like Kellum does and Tommy does and some other people do. So we don't deal with this day by day. But I understood last year that there were people who were picking up guys to go on the boat to be the third person, and they may not even participate in the culling of the oysters, but they were on there. So when the boat came to the dock, you end up with a 24 bushel limit instead of a 16 bushel limit. I just question whether or not it's wise for us at this point to say that we don't want any of this for the coming year.
Well, maybe my opinion is maybe trying to get this done and the need for this effort to be reduced will maybe be a driving force for either law enforcement, the commission, whoever, to come up with a direct plan and a direct initiative to stop the larceny, which I would say is a greater effort day to day than this 60 to 90 day season on these limited locations.
Right. Well, I guess there's a committee meeting now that is talking about statutory changes that could be made that possibly could make a difference. Of course, that's long term because that has to go through the legislature next year and has to pass. But that's something I think is near and dear to anybody's heart who wants to do it right. What are you going to do with the guys that want to do it wrong? What are you going to do with the guy that wants to go out and catch the small oysters, and whether he's putting them in a bushel basket or whether he's putting them in an orange, a milk crate or a trash can? He's going to try to save them until he sees law enforcement coming. That hurts everybody.
In the summertime, larceny, when the market is wide open for small oysters, leaves every one of them leaving in any manner or method that they want to and going to a viable market, where at least in the hand scrape season there is a size limit on those locations to help them stay put. And again, for lack of a better way to put it, we're barking up the wrong tree to reduce effort, in my opinion.
Is there anything that can be done to accommodate that desire?
Well, I'm not sure what you're asking. It's certainly something that the last 3 years has been an initiative of the former commissioner and now the commissioner, Don Bull. And we did talk about the EMS a little bit. We had a law enforcement subcommittee. Colonel Arden, the chief of the Marine Police, made a presentation to the commission to indicate two things. The degree of poaching, and this goes back to February of last year, the degree of poaching at that time, but also what it's like in terms of a law enforcement situation to try and make sure that they could cover certain areas. Law enforcement is also going to be dedicated to special emphasis with new personnel that they're getting their class at for new officers. Captain Green just mentioned about being stretched thin, because really what you're asking is it's a law enforcement situation. Captain Green said about being stretched thin. My understanding is there's 55 officers who could be in the field. Practically, there's 32 that really can because of other obligations, land-based or whatever. Of that 32, in any one day, because of different shifts, leave, everything else, it might be closer to half that or a little bit more. So you can figure out that even though it is a situation that's got pretty far out of control, that there has been some effective changes, and I think right now the idea is that short of going to electronic systems, which have been brought up, the idea is that you have to bring these cases to the commission. And they have been coming to the commission. Maybe there were some successful appeals because of, I'll call it technicality, with the way the notices are done, but sooner than later, a lot of these characters aren't going to have anywhere to work as far as the industry. So I don't know how you change that quickly. Everyone here understands the situation about Well, it's going to have to take a little bit. And the bad thing about it, I think, really is, to be honest, harvesters, is that shells are more difficult to come by. you know, that makes it harder on them because the product that they may have been able to rely on is being bootlegged, being stolen. So, you know, it's not everyone's mind. I mean, and I mean all the time. But you know, we don't have a way to tell that we can stop it easily, quickly. And law enforcement, I think, would say the same thing. But, you know, they sure are some detect that we make some cases and we'll continue to make cases.
Well, and from the commercial fishing end of it, this reduction in what amounts to a reduction in income is going to be just as hard of a pill for most fishermen to swallow as the responsibility of stopping the poaching, larceny, whatever you want to refer to it as, is for BMRC to swallow. So it's a knife that cuts both ways.
We have a
Rob talked a little bit about vessel monitoring systems, and it, you know, long term for the private industry and with the problems that we have, I think we have during the summertime, and the problems that I see, and we don't see it so much in our area, but problems in James River in particular, and possibly York River, working over leases, working the public resource in the James River, working the public resource, and working polluted areas, which is totally detrimental to the industry if, in fact, any of these polluted oysters ever get the market, which evidently, from what I hear, they may have gotten into the market, and they cause illness in the market. And we've all got a problem. And vessel monitoring systems, I think there's a certain amount of private industry that is willing to pay for their vessels to have vessel monitoring systems on them that VMRC could monitor, and that would stop a lot of problems that we have, and that would stop nighttime dredging, unless somebody has a boat sitting in a garage somewhere that nobody knows anything about. Anybody that dredged on private beds in the summertime or any all year long would have to have a vessel monitoring system, which could be monitored at VMRC by a small amount of personnel, because these boats would have numbers on them, so I understand, and you could tell whose boat was where they were. I don't see how we can get away from this particular idea. I understand the Attorney General's office has some problems with that, but somewhere along the line, it would stop problems that I heard of last week on private bids were next to public bids in the James River, where guys went on the public bid, supposedly, and worked and caught the public oysters that these watermen should have next winter. Not now. I mean, they're gone.
That's my exact.
And you know, and I don't, you know, we need to address these problems. The commission needs to address them. The industry needs to address them. And until we solve the problem of Jamie and some other people are on it, and law enforcement are doing a good job of trying to remove the bad actors from the industry. But do we have more bad actors coming into the industry to take place of the ones that are being removed? We need a mechanism in place to be able to control what's going on in all of these areas. I mean, Tommy will tell you that he hired boats, not this year, but last year, and put them up on a piece of bottom. Thought they were working on the piece of bottom that he put them on, and he found out they were working on another piece of bottom. And when he found that out, he got rid of them. But, you know, he thought he had control over these guys.
I've never been able to get a definitive answer from anyone, and I'd like your input. The track stick that we use for VDH purposes for aquaculture, or the 2 hour. I mean, for $75, what we've gone to since the issue that Lake spoke of, I can buy a track stick that the guy cuts on, takes with him, and when he comes back, we can plug it in a computer and tell everywhere he went and how long he was there. You know, I've brought it up several times, and it falls on deaf ears. You know, why can't we require a $75 stick that when you say you were here and I say I'm there, and it gets plugged in, I mean, it's clear as day. You've got coordinates, you've got times, you've got all the information you need. You know, why aren't we looking at requiring something? You know, if it gets thrown out of court, and I completely feel what you're saying, but also agree with Mr. Johnson, I think, you know, the commission beats themselves up that these guys get back out there. But when you're sitting around the dock buying oysters and you hear some of the things you hear and some of these honest watermen in this room here, it's costing somebody a lot of money. I mean, they're talking $10,000 and $15,000 legal fees. They've lost two months of income. I mean, I know the commission beat themselves up on the guys that got caught last year, and they got, you know, they appealed, and but you still cost them a season's work by the time they got through it. So, in my opinion, a win's a loss. I feel for what you got to deal with going back and forth to court, but you still worked on the problem. But will this track stick? Is that something that we could do?
Think about NOAA's DMS. Everybody wants to compare monitoring systems to NOAA's. NOAA's process itself, we go right back to that performance everything. We got to be able to verify the accuracy of that thing. We have to be able to do that on site. We have to be able to do that in court. And you're starting to get into a whole new set of ball games. So that alone is a tool, but that alone by itself, trying to do 100% of the trial and estimation is not going to work. Yes, if I say he's there and the track stick backs up my information, then I got it. However, if I didn't see him there, that track stick alone is not going to do me a whole lot of good. The vessel monitoring system worked well for NOAA because NOAA has basically a contract. When you get a federal permit, those of you who've had it before, you know what I'm talking about. You sign that permit, and they have control of your permit. You're saying you'll abide by all their rules and regs, and then they control the permit. If you do not abide by that, they just yank the permit. So if you have a monitoring system, like say you go in a closed area, elephant trunk, whatever, shallop is a big one. That's the one that's really the big bunch of things. It's about $3,500 a unit from them. They're the most accurate. Even they wouldn't hold up that great in the amount of distance we're talking about. We're talking a couple hundred feet. Because you're talking about 50 miles. You know, so, and they got the best system there. So that alone is not a tool to hang your hat on.
Well, how would it have worked last week when, I mean, everybody that's knowledgeable of the James River and is in the network, I mean, the buzz was what went on last week in the river. If, I mean, it wouldn't be difficult for MPO in this area to get some names of who was allegedly working in the James River. Why, if we had the track stick and they say I didn't do it, it's as easy as saying, give me your track stick. Let me see your track stick. And whether it holds up in court or not, I mean, we've got an epidemic, and I know, I don't have to tell you, you're living it every day, and I applaud you for what you've done.
We've got a lot of ways to go.
But at the same time, if it's something else we can put in this toolbox we're talking about, and as far as, you know, if we got to get behind you to go to the commissioner and say, push the envelope, tell the AG that supports this commission, push the envelope. You know, if it gets thrown out of court, if it whatever, but just throw everything we can at this. That
you're right about the if it gets thrown out of court, and the individual in the back was talking about that. But you got to remember, it's not just about getting the case thrown out of court. It's not a pride issue. It's not about that. You're setting precedent. This is not case law.
Exactly. We're setting precedent.
Right. But let me finish. It's not precedent on what you're thinking. It's precedent on what I'm thinking. If we keep carrying cases to court and we lose them, we're not only losing credibility to the judge, he's eventually going to tell us, and they have, don't bring them in here. So you've lost all of them. So you can't take a chance on losing your integrity all because there's an issue on the process. You have to keep integrity first, and then the chips will fall as they fall. Once you get them in a row, then you go to the next level. If you start getting a bunch of cases, you start loading them and getting dismissed, which we did on that ICE stuff. Here's ICE stuff, and the judges eventually said, you know, for the warm water harvest when the first came out. They finally said, don't come in here anymore. And so we had to make sure that we stepped back in front, and then we networked with the county, communicated with the health department, and said, hey, we can't do it anymore. We got to fix it. And that's what we did. We fixed it. Now we got something that's enforceable. You don't want your oyster rights to get like that.
Well, do we go to the Secretary of Natural Resources and say, this is our problem? The governor felt it was important enough this week to put out a major press release that gave an example. It found its way to the Midwest today. What can you do? You know, you can't convince me somebody in the Attorney General's office can't get involved with this and start doing more to educate the judges or do whatever. I mean, we're at the point. You're doing all you can do.
But at the same time, more of the issues, like if you look at some of the other states, if you start comparing yourself to see how New Jersey combats it, stuff like that, it might behoove this committee to look at how they handle things. I mean, we have a 2-year revocation, which that works. We've been doing really well. The commission's done a fine job the last, I guess, year, give or take, on really recognizing that. But when you go to New Jersey, they have a 5 and 10 and 15 year revocation. You know, the egregious offense for them were our egregious offenses. I don't know that that's the way to go, but most of their charges are civil. So they can just yank the licenses and don't have to work a call. Cool. Ours are criminal. You can't do that. We've got to do a trial. I mean, it's no different on ours as if it would have been assault and battery charge. We have the same exact criteria to meet as it would be an assault and battery charge. Well, and so that being said, you know, we've already set the bar super high. Our requirements are a little bit different. Now, you know, we get in issues where the most egregious offenders, we had a couple of them recently that we've had some good luck on it, you know. They get a 2-year revocation, and then you get somebody that did a real bad offense. They get a 2-year revocation because it's a match, but it's nowhere near as bad as the one before them. But 2 years is a match. Now, I don't know if that's the way to do it. But I do know that going all around in a circle trying to figure out every tool that works, I mean, the good deterrent we've done is the fact that we've nailed the ones that we got, and we've done a good job, and the commission's done a fine job on recognizing what's the court's the decisions by the court. And so, you know, that being said, I don't want to deflate the track stick issue or the monitoring issue by no means, because that is a tool. That's a fine tool for probable cause, and it will back us up when we make a case, big time. However, it's just a tool.
But it should be pretty inexpensive to initiate, and if it's anything that will help you at all, and it may be the other side of that is it may be some mindset there that there is a checks and balance. But, you know, I don't know the answer. I'm sitting here listening to all of this. I mean, you can't help but agree with everything Ben has said, you know, on the honest folks. I told you earlier, and I'll go ahead and address the basket issue. I'm totally opposed to the idea of the basket. At consultation of VMRC, we went to the legislature this year and had a code change on that measure, all built around these guys being able to cull and work in baskets, bring them to the dock and put it out. And it worked in the majority of the bay. And because we've got an issue in another area of the bay, it's getting ready to cause a lot of upset for a lot of people.
Well, it's with the processor, it's an economic issue.
Absolutely.
The economic issue is the fact that the basket is a lot less cubic inches than what the bushel tub is. And if the waterman had to put the oysters out in a bushel tub, he had to shovel them in the tub and put them out, you got 3,003 cubic inches of oysters. If you put them in the basket and shove them in the basket, you end up with, what, Jim,
26, like that.
2,600 cubic inches. If you cull them in the basket, the oysters lay flatter, and you can basically, a basket of oysters is equal to a tub. So it becomes an economic issue with the buyer. And I think in order to accommodate the watermen in the state of Virginia and also some individuals, for example, Tangier, you go catch your 8 bushels per man. They're in a basket, you dump them in a tub and you go on the boat and you're fine. But, or you take them out the basket. But now that the code change has gone through, we've got a problem. We've got a problem if, in fact, you go back to one basket, because the guy can take it either in the basket or he can take it in the tub. what's he going to do? He's going to take it at the basket. And we end up as buyers, have to adjust the market to absorb that. So I think that's a real rub in the time. The difference in the cubic inches in the basket and the tub.
And the other place I was going with it, and it kind of ties into all of this, for these guys that were catching these small oysters, I wasn't involved in that geographic region, but apparently the issue was they were putting the small oysters in, and on the way in they would throw them out.
If they saw law enforcement.
The other side of that, there was someone that wanted those oysters to buy them, because they wouldn't have caught them if it wasn't someone to purchase them. And, you know, if it's me, you know, the code allows to address it on my end when I take them off. You know, once they're on my premises and it's my resource, you know, I take full responsibility for that. But there, it seems to be some other tools to deal with it. I hear you. I feel for what you got to deal with. But it's, I'd like to hear from some of the watermen here that I see, I know, use the basket and use it in a proper fashion or whatever. It was a tool that allowed us to unload boats very rapidly. We were reminded, rightfully so, by MPOs that it is illegal to take oysters out this past season before the code changed. Out of a boat without it going through the metallic tub. So we were taking baskets, dumping them in the tub, and lifting them out. Now we're going back to the shoveling, and we're going back to the ability for someone, for lack of a better word, crib and a 24 cubic inch container as opposed to a metallic. But I defer to some of the watermen at this point on.
I tell you, one thing they were doing last year, I noticed a lot too, Jamie, was they would oyster till they get close to their limit. Say they had a 24 bushel limit. Well, they'd work till they had about 16 or 18 or 20 bushels, and this, they would put them loose in the boat in a pile. Well, then they would take them and shovel them in a basket. And you really don't get a basket doing it that way, you know. And they would, in essence, crib in a plastic basket. So when they got to the dock, they'd gain two or three bushels probably, or 24 bushels that way. I see a lot of boats doing that, and I didn't think it was right, you know. But it's legal because the basket was full.
That was a big issue trying to get the buyer's reports to match what the harvester actually possessed. They came in with, you know, their legal limit, and then they cribbed them in the tub.
Yep.
They would increase,
right,
even though the tub is larger. Mm-hmm. They were cribbing in the tub and increasing. So you would have a 24 bushel limit, and they would be putting out 26 to 27 bushels effectively.
Yeah.
And they were within their limit.
We've seen that a couple of times. But you can, if you hand place them in a plastic basket, it's a perfect bushel, metal bushel. When you turn it over and dump it in, like I say, but it got to be hand placed. They certainly can't be shoveled in.
It's not something that happened, you know, very often, but it did happen, and we've seen it because when we matched the force up, we couldn't figure out what was going on with it, and that was, and we went to that in place and we watched it, and so we were asked how to handle that situation when we didn't. That wasn't factored in when the regulation was made.
I saw that one coming.
Jeff, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I also like to say that it seems like it's easier for law enforcement as you come in. But if you had three men, you come to the dock, you've got 24 on your baskets, and look at them, and go to the next boat, and go, waiting to shovel out. And then you're also, you have a safety and a stability issue. It's a real problem with the smaller boats. Mm-hmm. If they have 16 bushels in an 18-foot privateer, they're like this. If they get into trouble, they're going down. I mean, they go down anyway, but they can get them out in a pack. And if, you know, if you make them go back to a crib, it's dangerous stuff in a small boat. I'm all for the orange bass.
This is agenda item 3, but I think we had a motion and a second on the table for the previous item. So if we can deal with that, my only suggestion on that might be, and I appreciate that you lumped everything together, but we may want to separate those out and take motions on each individual one. But we have a motion, a second on the table. Is there any more discussion on the motion? Do you want to repeat the motion?
Well, my motion was that neither A, B, C, nor D be adopted for the 2014-15 season until at least a clear directive of a plan by VMRC to curtail the larceny in the oyster industry be adopted and enacted, and use that action as the reduction in effort, not the day-to-day waterman trying to make a living reducing his effort.
One last comment.
Yes.
I'm going to have to agree with Lakey on this. I totally appreciate what you're saying, and all of larceny and poaching and everything is wrong. But I do think that there is somewhat of a plan to address this with the committee that we were sitting in prior to this through legislative action. So I'm just not going to be able to support the motion, but it's not for the – I mean, it's for a different reason. I think there is something going on that's going to help address that, but it's – your motion, I don't think, is going to accomplish what you want.
Just so everybody's clear, there's a committee that's before this meeting that's been working on some code sections and tightening things up and making things more restrictive and dealing with some of this larceny issues and things like that. So is there any more discussion, any questions on the motion? Tommy?
I have one.
If he took those two things out of the motion, would you be agreeable to his motion?
Okay.
But if you took out the control date and the time limit, would you be agreeable to that motion?
No, he wants a time limit.
Well, I'm not really that in favor of Biaski. I mean, you know, the Biaski deal with her. I myself, I can say personally, for me, I have a bigger issue of getting them in the boat than I do getting them out of the boat. The legislative.
I think what we were what we were talking about, the orange baskets and the item three, that's separate from the motion. So the only thing we're talking about is item two, control date, individual mandatory reporting, daily time limit, and vessel limits, that those would not be appropriate ways to limit growth in the industry. So if there aren't any other comments or questions, Rob?
Yeah, I want to comment on the mandatory reporting aspect. Ever a reason to limit entry. Certainly the committee and industry would be a big part of that discussion. So we went through this with striped bass, horseshoe crabs, gillnet fishery in terms of the different classes of gillnet fishery. The dogfish was a big issue. In that case, industry probably had too much involvement because they ended up not liking what they did with the amount of participants that were left over, which were about 107. So it's a situation that does involve everyone, but if you favor a control date, as Dan Dodge just said, then from experience, it's a real mess. System that can tell everyone who's doing what. With striped bass, we had a terrible time because it was before we understood that we had helpers there. We have a situation with mandatory reporting in general where you have a primary, that's the person who reports, and you have helpers or secondaries. And they're also licensed fishermen. And it tangles everything up. This is a good chance to, at least for the oyster fishery, to make sure that each licensee is going to report his or her own harvest. And in fact, the code really wants that. If you look at 282.241 of the code, that's really what is indicated. So, just a word of encouragement.
I will amend my motion and take B out because a little bit more paperwork is not going to take any income off anyone's plate. So I will take B out of the motion, so just A, C, and D then.
So is every
comments, are you ready to vote?
Yeah. No, we'll still take comments on the motion. As long as there's comments or questions about the motion, we should have questions.
Mr. Chairman, I think I agree with Ben on the concept of what he's talking about. I would rather see these be actually considered individually instead of collectively. And at that point, I think you get a better consensus on the program as presented rather than everything balled into one. But I don't know whether you'd be able to amend in your motion to...
I don't disagree to that. Whatever makes it the easiest for everyone to understand or differentiate, I'm all in favor of, so...
Well, we would technically have to vote on the existing motion that's on the table, or if you're willing to amend it and just say maybe the motion is to not adopt the control date, and then we can discuss that and vote on each one individually.
Can you withdraw?
I will just withdraw it and start over then. Probably the easiest thing to do.
I'll second, yeah.
Okay, motion's withdrawn.
Okay, then I would like to make the motion that no control date be put on the hand scrape or drudge license season of 2014 and 15 until a definitive plan is created by VMRC to curtail the larceny issue that's prevalent in the oyster fishery.
I'll second that.
Okay, a motion and a second. Any discussion on the control date? Does everybody understand the control date?
Yeah,
concept?
I'm not sure how that.
Well,
how the two are related.
To what point will you be? I mean, you know, and I'm just asking. To what point will you be satisfied on the larceny issue? I mean, how?
That there is a.
How do we determine when we've got enough? I mean, because this is, you know, this is going to keep going on. I mean, this has been around since the ball days. This thing just started.
No, sir, you're exactly right in that. My whole concern is they can come up with a definitive plan on how to limit the, again, honest man or the commercial fisherman, but they can't come up with a definitive step-by-step plan of an approach or a course of action to curtail the larceny. And that's all I'm asking is for a step-by-step, we're going to do A, B, C, and D, to curtail this larceny. Whether or not it works, time will tell. I'm asking for a plan, not necessarily a direct date that it's going to happen or anything else. Just the same as they're coming up with a plan for us, I'm asking them to come up with a plan for themselves.
I think the control date, you know, the way I understand it, it should not affect the existing industry. So I'm not sure that the honest waterman, or therefore the dishonest one as well, but I don't think that would have much impact on what you're talking about with the larceny issue, which I can completely agree with is a major issue in the industry, but I'm not sure the control date is really what we're talking about.
Until someone has a son coming along or a daughter or anyone else that's getting ready to get out of college or high school that wants to take part in this industry, and they can't because they were just born too late, which this... industry has been, well, since the Bible days, as he put it, an industry that has carried on for generation to generation among families. Not in every instance, but in a large instance, it has. And for that opportunity not to be there because of a simple date is, in my opinion, unfair.
But would you suggest that anybody, then you're. I understand the issue about, you know, a future generation coming into the business, but we have an issue where people are getting into the business where they're only getting in for the beginning, and that's not their lifetime livelihood.
Well,
and limited entry would move towards at least limiting.
The limited entry was set with the commercial registration licenses years ago, and that process got abused and abandoned. So now here we are where we're at today.
Joe, did you have a comment?
Just a clarification on this. I mean, when we're talking about taking the control date, we're going a little further with it than it should. First off, the control date is just that. It's a tool, if we choose to use it in the future, for limited entry. If we go down that path of limited entry, all of your concerns would be addressed, because if we establish limited entry, then we also established ways of doing the transfer, be it between family members due to death, due to retirement, or just outright transferability between two homes.
build those in. We just don't set it up so we limit entry, and then no one else can get in, and it's just over time that everyone dies out of it. We build in all these other things you're concerned about are built in the limited entry. So there is some way of getting people in and getting people out. The thing is to cap it at a number, and then there's your limit. So you get out, and you've got a son coming in, transfer it over. Or someone else you know is getting out, and you want to get your son in, transfer it, something like that. And that would work. All that would be developed with the committee input as well. If we don't design limited entry in this way of just locking you in, and if you are the only ones that are in there, well, guess what? Ain't nobody in the next generation.
I very well understand that, and very well understand for a quota to be fair and equitable, it has to be transferable among all the parts of that quota. But just because you're saying there may be a license available doesn't necessarily mean that it will be in a timely manner. As again, and I'm not arguing the details, but
well, Mr. Chairman, let me I think, Ben, I think what you're trying to do basically is not adopt anything until VMRC takes some steps to try to level the playing field.
Correct.
But VMRC is probably going to adopt something at the next meeting, no matter what this group says, I think. I don't know that.
Probably so, but your voice may be heard.
Yeah. So, I don't know whether not acting on any of this, and certainly I feel as strongly about the poaching issue and the illegal issues as you do. In fact, I felt stronger probably longer than you have, but because I'm older. But I don't know that we'll accomplish a lot other than send a clear message to the MRC that something's got to be done about these other issues. Whether or not they can react before this season or before August or not, I don't think they can react before the August meeting that quickly.
Yeah, Rob.
So you don't want to hear a lot from staff, and I appreciate it. The plan, I think in the last couple of years, there has been a plan. The plan involves law enforcement and their efforts, and a lot of their efforts are really things that none of us really know a lot of detail about because law enforcement jobs, but that's phase one. Phase two is the commission. The commission has heard, I'm going to guess, 13 or 14 cases, somewhere around there. And it looks like other than those appeals are going to have some success. So it was designed that way. The former commissioner designed it that way, to go this route. The future, whether we have to go through a vessel monitoring system, and Mr. Cowart is right about the sort of qualms of the AG's office or even legislators about that type of approach, eventually that might have to be something that is part of the plan. It's not right now. It's been introduced by the law enforcement, to the law enforcement subcommittee when they were meeting. So, the other part, Tommy Leggett had mentioned the earlier meeting, there will be a legislative package. And Tommy Kellum has wisely suggested to the commissioner items that look at the effect of making sure these violations are treated with the heaviest weight should be set aside from the overall legislative package so that the legislators don't get bogged down in what they're really looking at. So there is definitely a plan afoot. It's not perhaps something that all you can do, Mr. Johnson, is to wait and see the recounting of all these elements, what law enforcement is able to do, what the commission is able to do, what the legislature is able to do. So, plan is afoot. The second item, control date, I mean, that's something that you could, not you personally, but you you as a group would talk about a lot. But, I mean, really, it's something that is supposed to make sure that the children also aren't disadvantaged, because we have a system that has so much effort in it that it's really not leaving an opportunity for those who are coming in, at least with a control date in place. Now, I'm not trying to sell this to you. I'm just trying to tell you my experience. At least with a control date and some type of limitations, whatever they are, can include transferability, that does offer opportunity. But I don't know whether 627 is the cap or not on who's going to be in this fishery. So I wouldn't try and change the model of anyone's mind. I think since I have heard through several of these situations, yes, they are both good and bad. When we first started looking at new entry with striped bass, it goes back to 1992. There was a stack of literature that anything you looked at, you could come away as confused as you started. Good chance to get this answer.
Would it be the will of the committee to add E to the what's proposed that's going back to the commission, that this committee, for lack of a better word, demands a plan by a date established here tonight? I know everyone's doing all they can, but you got to realize the guys that sat in James River last week and watched happen and then come here tonight with all of this, they don't think you have a handle on it. And quite honestly, I don't think you've got a handle on it.
You don't have a handle on it.
And I see the work that Jamie's done in York River, and it's netted. I think I'm right in saying that one of the cases that the commission took up this week was a result of the effort you have done. I asked at two of these committee meetings ago at the possibility of an oyster task force that dealt just with oyster issues, and you know, the commissioner quasi agreed, and you know, I consider you have a task force in your river. You know, we don't see it in other areas, so you know, would it be the will to adopt as part of the management plan that this committee demands, and it's brought to the attention of the commission that this committee has demanded a plan to deal, and I'm not going to worry to use the word poaching, the thievery issue that we've got. I think the issues we're having with judges, we've created a little bit of this with the poaching word, because poaching in the mind of most of the public is somebody that shoots a duck out of season. You know, what has he really caused someone? You know, feathery with the amount of dollars that we're talking about now, it's a big issue. But, you know, would it be the will of the committee?
You know, and add to that, because when they started this thing with the summertime harvesting, one of the biggest things was how critical it was to the health of the people. We got people going out there collecting polluted oysters and trying to put on the market. So that's just as critical as the HACCP. So maybe that could be incorporated in your thinking as well.
I mean, something clearly taken back to the commission from this committee, because I think we're fortunate with the makeup of our commission that a lot of folks have, you know, good knowledge of good actors, and I'm not going to call them bad actors. I'm going to call them thieves, because that's what they are. But I would like the commission to know that this committee is concerned about what's going on. You've got commercial watermen asking for this. That, you know, it's pretty bad when you're asking, when commercial fishermen are asking their enforcement, do something, help us. And I would like to see something go back to the commission and a plan drawn up and come back.
So maybe a terminology would be adulterated? So the stealing and adulterated product?
You know, I would say anything that's in this that pertains to oysters. You know, I don't like taking issue with Jamie on the orange basket, and I'm getting a little off going. I'm not going back to the orange basket. But when you get in the code book and you start looking at it, it's a code to deal just about with any, pretty clear code to deal with just about any issue that this commission has to hear. I'm talking about anything in the code book, John, that deals with the oysters.
But that what you're addressing, I think, is critical. That may solve this issue. What do you think, Robbie? What he's asking.
You talking to me? I'm sorry.
I was.
Sorry.
I called you your daddy's name.
That's that family thing I passed down.
Your family's all the same.
I agree, and I will say that the impetus of my motion is to call attention to this very problem and to, again, demand that something be done about it and something specific be done about it, not just to, hey, we're trying.
Well, I don't want to belabor it anymore, but I think that a more clear way to do that is, as Tommy said, we need a motion to say that our number one objective here in this committee meeting tonight and probably in the future is to address the issue that you brought up. I don't know that we need to pass over each one of these issues and not vote on them because we want the commission to do something, but I'd certainly be 100% in favor of a motion to have that be the number one priority of the commission to address the, if you want to use the word, poaching issue. Maryland defines poaching as working 1 hour before sunup or 1 hour after sundown, working in a closed area, whether it be polluted or off-season, working on a private lease without permission to work on the private lease, or working in an area, hand-tong area, for example, with a dredge, or a sailboat area with a dredge if you're not allowed in those areas. That's what Maryland's law says about poaching. That's what the definition is. Virginia may have a similar law, but that's what Maryland says. So that's, you know, when you start talking, whatever word you use, I think the message needs to be sent to the commission that this is the number one issue as far as we're concerned. All these other things are going to probably be acted on by the commission in August, and I really think that this committee should have some input on them. But we, in the meantime, need to send a clear message that this is what you really need to be looking at.
I would agree. I strongly support sending a message to the commission, but these other issues in number two are fishery management issues that do need to be addressed for this particular season.
And again, and I completely agree with what you just said, Mr. Cowart. Again, my only, and I don't have a problem with that, my only disagreement is that this reduction in effort will come from curtailing this problem. That is my point. I won't look at the statistics and tell you that effort does or does not need to be reduced. I'm simply saying the easy way and fair way to reduce the effort on this resource is to get the larceny out of it. Mm-hmm. And however y'all, I will remove my motion and however anyone would like to word a motion to carry that point, I will be glad to let that happen.
Well, I think your motion is fine on the table to do the control date. What I think we're suggesting is maybe a separate motion to address the larceny issue.
That's fine.
So does anybody else have a comment on the Rob?
I just wanted to, it's a pretty good discussion, but I want to remind everyone that you're part of an advisory committee to the commission, so it would be sort of awkward to demand that the commission do something to get back to you. It's sort of going in the wrong direction, so I would encourage you to even say the same thing to you.
There's no positive in this subject, Mr. O'Reilly.
Be positive about how you tell them.
I think we can do that. I think we can do that. Thank you. Okay, we have a motion and a second on the table to not adopt the control date as limiting the growth in the industry. Is that correct?
Correct.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
No. Ayes have it.
You hear that, Dan?
Hey.
Okay.
Well, it still passes. The motion still passes. Yeah.
I would move that we accept the individual mandatory report as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion on a second and a second to adopt the individual mandatory report as a way to limit growth in the handscrape and dredge fishery. All those in favor? Say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Passes. Anybody want the third one? So we're moving on to the daily time limit.
Dan, would you want to comment on the daily time limit?
I think this is just a stretch. I really do. I mean, you know, you say you're cutting it by 2 hours, as I said before. You know, our season starts December, and, you know, good Lord willing, I hope we are. We hope we don't have to go till 12 o'clock. But chances are, if you pass this year, and we just heard GM's survey for next year, chances are 12 o'clock and it's going to stay. There's times I did work past 12 o'clock. You take like the whole month of February. There were times I didn't have to work till 12 o'clock, but there were times I had to work till 2. It gets spotty, it gets hit and miss. Sometimes you hit a spot, sometimes you don't, and sometimes it takes you till 11 o'clock to hit the spot. But you've still got 3 hours to go. If you knock it back to 12, I don't, the ones you're affecting is the ones that need to do it. I don't have any other option. You take from December until May. My wife starts working part-time with the tour season, but from December until May, 100% of my income comes from my boat. And if, 2 hours, say, well, it's not that much, 2 hours. But sometimes 2 hours is a lot. 2 hours is the difference between a day's work and not a day's work. I think that this is a stretch, and I think the ones that you're going to be affected is the ones that need it.
Any other comments?
I agree with you too, Dan. I tell you, I really can't support this 12 o'clock. I think it's fine the beginning of the year in October, November when it's plentiful oysters, but I tell you, in January and February, when times get tight, I mean, it's hard. You're looking at 5-6 bushels at 2 o'clock a lot of times up in Area 7, Area 8 last year. I mean, it's very, very rare that they had the limit. And by cutting it back 2 hours, it's going to have a pretty big impact on people's income. I tell you.
So your days are shorter.
Yeah, they are.
Until December 21st, your days are shorter too.
Yeah, and with this half an hour before sunrise, I think you can't leave the dock until that. So if you got an hour's running time, you've lost an hour on that end of it. So it's really hard to justify taking it away on the other end. Because there's so much being taken on the beginning of it, on the sunrise part of it. So I agree with Dan. I think it should stay at 2 o'clock.
Anyone else?
I want to say this, too. I think that, I think I stated this earlier, but if I ain't, you're going to hear it again. This fishery has been to 2 o'clock way, way back. Like, when my diet was kind of long, it was all day until I think you had to have the oysters off by dark. Well, as he got a little older, he got pushed to 2 o'clock, and that was a good thing. But I don't think this needs to be pushed back to any further. From working from 12 to 2 is not the problem. That's not what's taking the oysters away. If people are intended to save them, in my experience, if people are intended, if this is to save the little oysters, if this is to save the stuff to stay out on the rock, in my experience, the people that save the little oysters are long gone before 12. I just don't see the benefit from it. takeaway from it. I think the takeaway is much greater than the benefit is.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second on the table. All those in favor of the motion?
Read the motion.
Hear a motion. Oh, sorry. I was hoping there's a motion. Sorry, Kathy. Anybody want to make a motion?
Well, I'll move that the daily time limit not be adopted. That we stay at 2 o'clock.
Second.
All right, now there's a motion. Yeah, Dan? You got it. Yep. Yep. All right. We have a motion and a second on the table. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Not adopted.
Does staff have any give and take on that, or how will that one be presented to the commission?
I don't know. At this point.
The last item in there is vessel limits. The suggestion was 16 bushels per vessel.
So, clarification, Jim, that's talking about two people on a boat. There could be three, but the vessel
could
be three, limited
but the vessel
to two.
Can only have 16.
And then the people that will report will be the two individuals?
Yeah.
Rather
well,
than three.
There are three guys that had cards. They would be all three reporting out of 16.
Three cards would report on 16?
I mean, if you had three guys on there.
But more than likely, one of the guys would come off and go somewhere else.
I know, but if there were three guys, would they pay the user fee?
They're not going to do that. No, they're going to have somebody.
Do that, I mean,
right.
How does that affect them on, once we've established this control date, how does that affect If I have a boat and I have traditionally had two guys and took advantage of the 24, if this limit's 16 and I still got my two guys and this other guy's, I report him as a helper, does that go towards the harvest effort? So if that third guy at some point down the road wants his own boat or whatever, does he have any... Understand.
They're really licensees who are on the boat with the primary. So the database now that we have would be able to pick those folks out. And they would be listed, you would be listing them in your report, that third person, so that he would count just as the other two on the boat did.
But he would not have to have a user fee.
Anyone who has that license would.
Yeah, I guess I'm asking if a helper's on the boat.
A call boy. You're talking about a call boy.
I'm talking about the guy that has people hired. I mean, can you buy a license but not have a user fee since you're not getting any harvest out of it? Because the fear there is going to be for the guys that you've established a control date, or we've talked about establishing a control date.
You don't need a user fee license or anything if you're not catching them.
But he wants to
have a license, though. Yeah, license. Just to say I bought a license, you know, if this guy has had a license for the last 15 years.
Well, when you buy a license,
but you're not going to allow him to catch a limit.
Well, it's a boat limit now. It's not a per-person limit, right?
Two people. They go to the man 16 to the vessel.
Is that what you're proposing, Jim? Or is it just a flat 16 bushels to the boat?
That's what's proposed.
Well, we're talking about three people on a boat, right?
Well, yeah. For Jim.
And one's not getting the harvest, is that what you're indicating?
Well, he's not allowed to get the harvest. Right. But I'm just, you know, what you're trying to do is curb harvest. And I know of some instances of father and son, and they've got a helper they've had for years that's probably going to stay on the boat. He doesn't have a boat of his own. But if he doesn't buy a license and you've established a control date, you know, maybe if 5 years down the road he did want a boat or a rig of his own, where is he at?
But he doesn't have it in the system we have now either.
Okay. And we would hash that sort of thing out when you brought the control date up to actually talk about what we were going to do with the control date.
It'd be a long discussion, but you have to, you know, because it is complicated that way. You've introduced a complication about it, but in the past, even with Strike Bass, they all had the card, at least the CFRL. If the person you're talking about, not to belabor this, doesn't have even CFRL, because we're sure whether he said he would have a CFRL or not. If he has a CFRL, then there could be some way to at least talk about bringing in helpers as part of the future. If he has no CFRL, I don't see any way to do that.
But Jamie, he could buy a license and be on the boat, but if his name's not on the reporting and he's not catching a limit, he could still own a license.
Correct. That's the CFRL he was talking about.
Okay. Well, that would address what...
The only thing I'll focus on here is the limit for a person. A person can't have a limit if they do not have...
A user fee
and stuff like that. And what they're... From what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, because that's not out of my purview, I heard 16 bushels to the boat, but basically 8 bushels to the man. So no more than 2 limits per boat. If you carry 3 people, you're still not allowed to 2 limits. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So if one person's on the boat, you're still even 8 bushels, mm-hmm. which is a couple of boats with only 1 people. So that's what I understand.
So the way we started this was 3 on a boat. They all have the licenses. They all have the user fee. Mm-hmm. They're held to 16 bushels. And, you know, 5 1/3 bushels, however you want to work the math, that's possible too, because it's a vessel limit. Why someone would do that, we're not sure. But
well, the only reason to do it would be for the reporting aspect. And I'm thinking some people aren't going to know that, and this is going to be an issue down the road, and that's the one I'm concerned about. I'm not concerned about the one we originally started this on that they just picked up until they can't catch the limit anymore, and then they boot him. You've answered my question. I'm concerned about that guy, but you've answered my question. But I would like to hear from some watermen what their thoughts on this are.
Yes, sir, in the back.
Full-time working warden is going to get in another boat or do something else. Then he wants to, you know, I don't see what the purpose is. 8 bushels to the man, like it was, I understood that. You just want, I think you just put more, if you just more boats.
I agree.
Any other questions, comments? Yes, sir.
What gives any of y'all the right to tell who can work and who can not? This belongs to everybody in the state of Virginia, not two of their rights.
I don't think.
My brother's been working for 20 years. He got sick. Now he can't come back and go to work because y'all are trained up. Who do you think you are? And what do you think you are?
I don't think anybody's saying that, sir.
No, you can't understand anything if you don't want to.
Are there any other questions, comments?
What is the purpose of the 8-16 to the main?
Jim?
16.
The 8 to the main. I mean, that part was.
It is. It's still 8 to the man, 16 to the boat. It's to reduce the time that you're out there harvesting. You get the 16, you'd be gone. I mean, we had a whole lot of the fishery last year that just hired people, just got a user fee for people that don't have boats just to get an extra limit on the boat. Right, they didn't have a boat to go wash it. Yeah.
But,
right.
But Jim, you have to pay the $300 user fee as well.
Yeah.
So in other words, you're just as licensed as you would be if you were in another boat.
That's right.
There's no other license required for the extra boat. Is that right? So okay, so let's say I'm the third guy on the boat, and I don't want to go on that boat this year. I've already been paying, was it $300? What else do I need to pay in order to be able to go on my own boat?
You just have
$48, which is what? How much is that?
$48.
Okay.
$190 for a commercial card.
Right. Well, he already had. Yeah. Guy already has a commercial card, and he already has a $300 license.
Yeah.
And how many boats do we have in Virginia that are working this way with three boats?
Well, based on the vessel reports, there's not that many with threes. Mm. I mean, I've had less than 20% of the boats.
So, at a 420, so about 80 approximately?
No, it wasn't anywhere close to that.
Well, it wasn't, okay.
Because all those 427 are not working.
Okay.
But do you really think it's going to reduce the effort to go to a 16-bushel limit?
I think you would try it to see. I mean, that was a suggestion at the spring meeting from the watermen as a way to control effort, as they thought there would not be a lot of more boats. And
so that was a waterman suggestion to start with?
Yeah.
Well.
How many of these third people out there do you think are going to just be satisfied to give up their 8 bushels? For this season, just how many?
Don't know that. I mean, we have a lot more user fees than we have boats that are out there working. So,
how many actual people do you think will say, "Well, okay, I just won't make the money this year," and or just will go get on another boat with somebody else?
We had more people doing 3-boat limits a while ago. It's been the movement of the entire fishery. Yes. More of them have gone from 3 back to 2s than the 2s to 3s.
There's enough boats in this state to carry anyone who wants to go oystering. So if they want to put 5 people on the boat and catch 40 bushels, or put 2 people on the boat and catch 16, it's all accomplishing the same goal.
Well, right now, we've had the limit of 24 for a long time.
And that's fine. You can't put any more than 3 people to the boat. But, again, there's enough boats that if you say you can't put but 2 to the boat, those folks are going to go somewhere and find a boat to get on to go to work, if they want to go to work. And chances are, with them being in this industry, they're not going to be able to take the winter off and say, I'll start again next spring because I can't find a boat to work on.
Support. I mean, it's available in support. So you can push them to really our limit.
I think one thing you have to understand too, it's relatively cheap to get into oyster fishery. I mean, as far as getting your boat set up and ready to go oystering, you know, you're not talking a lot of money as far as like a crab pot rig or something like that. I mean, it's so I think it's easier for people to do that, to be able to fall back and go to another boat, because it is such a cheap fishery, relatively speaking, to be able to get into. I mean, you use an 18-foot Carolina skiff and a 30 or 40 horse motor have a power pack, and you can go oystering, you know, and probably, you know, $5,000 to $8,000 or something, the guy's going to be out there oystering. So,
Jim, weren't those guys that were talking about the having that 3-bushel limit, weren't they talking about like the people that would just jump on a boat in the first of the season, and they might normally do shingle work and stuff like that, and they just wanted to jump on the boat the first couple of weeks and make a hustle when there was a lot of oysters, and then they'd be gone? Isn't that what
some of them do that?
Isn't that what the watermen were talking about? The reason they wanted to have the bushel limit on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
That's. Yeah. I don't know how important that is, but I seem to remember that's what they were talking about, to try to keep these guys that don't make a living on the water off of it. So what you basically have done with the 16 bushels to the boat is do that to try to keep these guys that want to take advantage of the industry just for the first month, you know, when there's a bunch of oysters and they disappear and go back to doing carpentry work or whatever.
That was the recommendation.
I don't know.
Last meeting,
yeah.
I don't
know, Johnny. Me, it's safer with 3 on a boat, especially right ahead.
Yeah. I'm just thinking that's what was. I think that might be what he's basing that on, whether it's right or. I guess I feel like if you got a license to catch 8 bushels of oysters, you ought to be able to catch 8 bushels of oysters. That's the way I feel about it.
Jim, this isn't so much a resource issue for what's on the particular rock, to preserve the resource on the rock.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if you don't. The less you dredge on them with the spat and everything that's on them, the more they'll be there the next time you go around there, because there is harvest mortality.
But that wasn't the driving force.
Well, the driving force of this was somehow to get effort down, and that was a suggestion at the last meeting that they thought it would not increase the number of people, boats that are out there that much.
So basically, the effort has already been kept down by limiting the amount of time that they could be there. Like, you know, it's open for a month or 3 weeks or 6 weeks.
Yeah, but most of these places are pretty much caught up before the 2 months is over.
Yeah. Early two last year, I think, was the exception, you know, to that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that might be more fair than sit there and not let somebody that has a license to be able to catch 8 bushels of oysters every day and taking that privilege away from him that he's had for all his life, but he doesn't own a boat, so he goes to somebody else. You know, that is probably kind of tough for maybe some people. I'm fortunate it's no one be for me, but I can imagine.
Any other comments, questions? I guess we don't necessarily. Yeah, Robbie. Well, we don't have to really take action on it. This would only be to give a recommendation to the commission. If we don't need to take an action on it, do we?
No.
I think we can.
Great. What's your motion?
Taste of motion.
I think if there's three men on the boat, they ought to be able to catch 24 bushels is what I think. If they got a license to catch them, they ought to be able to catch them. Mm-hmm. I certainly wouldn't want to be on a boat and not be able to use what I paid for all my life to not be able to get it. If I went with somebody else, I wouldn't think that's fair. But I understand what you're trying to do, but I think there's another way to do it. I think you could do that by instead of having the ground open for 8 weeks, you could make it 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, and then that's fair for everybody. But to sit there and pick out a man that's had a license all his life for 40 years or 10 years or whatever, and he can't catch his 8 bushels, I don't think that's fair.
Jimmy, I think you indicated this was driven by the waterman. I mean, did the waterman in the state support or not support the change?
Where are the watermen?
Well, I mean,
it came from this committee.
I recall the circumstances. I remember the gentleman sitting right over there and talking about how reefers would come and jump on the boat the first month and make a little hustle, you know, when oysters were real abundant and the weather was real nice, and then they would disappear in December and January, and then the guys that were sitting over there trying to make a living every day, they had to go through the crumbs because these guys came off the jobs and jumped on it. I remember vividly.
I mean, the reason we had avoided shortening the seasons was because it would lead to gaps in product from Virginia.
Johnny, I think that was more a problem before they had the unit fee.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Before they had to shell out the $300. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think it was a problem previous years up until this year when they got hit with that money to go. A lot of that.
Will the individual mandatory report take care of that, Robbie?
Didn't leave the dock for a while last year because we were checking, so they had to go we got so many complaints from law enforcement about us enforcing user fees, and now we're here and we don't enforce the user fees. I don't. I've received several dozen complaints during the weekday about us enforcing the user fee and checking the same user fee 4 or 5 times a week. So I don't know where the happy medium is, but
Drudge license.
When we board them, we check them every time for the factory that's supposed to be in possession. The possession of the license law.
Right.
Not, you know, of course, you know, people can forget their wallets, but the law states they must be in your possession, so we just don't give the benefit of the doubt every time. Now, if we check you 2 or 3 days in a row, we write up, we call you, you may get to the point where we're not going to do it that day or something like that. There's always the totality of the circumstance. You know, we board the same boats every day. So we've got a good handle on most of the individuals involved. I mean, I know half the people in this room. I know the boats are on. I can tell you the name. I know where most of you live. So, I mean, come on.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Is that Drudge license a regulation or is that code? Can we have?
I mean, right now we say if regulation says one to the vessel.
I was initially in favor of the 16 bushel. I can't see the gentleman in the back, but after hearing his comments, I would like to make a motion that we stick with the 24 bushel and require a drudge permit of each individual on the boat.
I'll second that.
Got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? All right.
Good. Okay, now we got Robbie here. I mean that.
Okay.
Little Robbie.
All right. Jim, do we have to go to item one and actually make any recommendation on the oyster seasons?
No, I mean, that's
just information.
You can say you don't like them, but we've kind of got into this rhythm on them now. But
I move that we adopt it.
Okay. Second.
Motion and second to adopt the Oyster Ground 2014 public oyster ground harvest seasons. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Don't oppose. Next item on the agenda is the baskets. Or moving away from the baskets, I guess, the proposal to go to an open pile. We've heard, obviously, we started this conversation, had a lot of discussion about it. When I heard of this, my only concern, which I understood, was that there are small oysters that were being discarded and kind of wasted, and the concern was the resource, protecting the resource. And I hear the other, you know, issues with this. So I don't know if we need a motion on it or not, but I'm sure there's more discussion if people have comments.
Mr. Chairman, before we go there, I would make a motion that this committee request a plan on the enforcement of the oyster laws with a response to come back to the committee. I guess going back to your comment, I wasn't demanding the commission itself do it. I was demanding that the commissioner, I would like to make a request of the commissioner.
Second.
Got a motion and a second on the table to request of the commissioner that there's a plan for the current oyster larceny that's taking place.
That's to address the larceny?
Yes, sir.
Any of the larceny, the pollution issues?
I think that should be pointed out specifically.
Yeah, I agree.
And the adulterated oysters that are being caught.
So I would ask, you said pollution issues?
Yes, yeah, specifically dealing with the larceny and the pollution, the harvest, the illegal harvest of pollution. Condemned oysters.
Poaching takes care of all that.
Yes, your definition for Maryland covers it.
Okay, everybody understand the motion? Any comments, discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes. So we're back to the orange basket issue with open pile. Any more comments on it? Yes, sir.
As a commercial fisherman, the only thing I like about the orange basket, it don't matter if they lose, I've done it for years, but with the limits
Yeah.
To protect me from Jamie Buster's name. I just use that for example. Even if I ain't got but one to dump them,
Did you forget that?
I hear you.
I think that's a.
I don't know how leeway that limit is. You know, you know yourself, John. You can get a couple books in a pile, correct?
Yeah, oh yeah.
All right. Well, a couple books will may not be good enough, but there's extra books in the can. You know what I mean? That's why I like the back. We used them last year, first time I've ever used them. I like them. You know, without a limit. We do what it has. We won't overhaul them.
Take them and go.
AJ.
Yeah. Tommy.
One way to address that is you're allowed one basket on the boat, so you could fill a basket and dump it. Or is that too much of a headache?
No, you would be allowed. That you were allowed that before. Yep.
But you do get into the issue that Jamie was talking about earlier of taking that one basket and making 16 if that's your limit and getting at the dock and shoveling 18 out because
whether or not you can believe whether or not you can get 18 out of 16
or
whatever it is, you got an argument
for it. That's a magical
going to the gentleman's comment in the back, I know on the Rappahannock in the previous years we had a lot more issue with over the limit than we people catching over the limit than we did small oysters, and I know that's subject to the resource, the size of the resource we had there as well, but I think that's an excellent point that we did not have that issue. The watermen that put out at our facility didn't see that issue last year, but I would move that for the reasons stated that we not support the modification of the culling procedure. And, Jamie, that's not directed at law enforcement, but...
That's what I'm here for. All these other issues we were talking about, I wasn't here for that. My stand is we're against the basket issue, so we can get that straight. I know it doesn't bode well with a lot of the guys for safety and storage, and I understand it. I do. We've had a tough time. We predicted it coming, where, especially in the York River, where the guys were... and they were dumping them on us. And when you catch one, of course you get one and you get into a fleet of boats of about 50 and you see everybody going back going over the side. You got one, but you know, it didn't work so well. They couldn't have shoveled on us.
Doesn't 28.2513 allow you to arrest someone on visual inspection of someone dumping product over?
I mean, but
the code reads, it is unlawful for a person to have any oysters or shells on the culling board, deck, washboard, or any receptacle above, or in the hold of the boat, in the deck house of the boat, basically anywhere. I'm going past that. The attempt of any person to escape, to throw oysters or shells in the water other than in the ordinary process of culling, or to place oysters or shells on the culling board or deck from the hold, shall be prima facie evidence of the violation of the commission's...
I'm very familiar with the code. I hope you're not reading it to me. So, that being said, it's an impeding charge. Let's cut through the chase so you don't have to get so caught up. It's an impeding charge. In order for me to charge you with impeding, I have to prove that you knew without my intent. My intent was to call you and check your oysters. There is no law on the books for anybody to catch their limit of legal oysters and just dump them right back in the garden. And I have to prove that that wasn't what you're doing. You're saying it can, the prima facie evidence to see, in this wonderful legal system the Commonwealth has, I have to have a person that I can prove it can. You have to participate in a crime. Well, if it wasn't a crime, just indeed alone wouldn't be a charge. I have to get a voice, I have to get a response, a distance, I got noise from motors, I got all that. So, you know, it sounds really good in the code section, but listen, you know, don't get too hung up in when you get law and lawyers involved, it's not necessarily the same.
Well, I'm well aware of that because VMRC asked us to change the code for the very reason that I'm not.
That's more of an impeding issue, is what it addresses. There's also an impeding and officer's inspection ordinance, which pretty much matches that. We have had zero success trying to enforce that
the way it's written up to this date. And I would not make any suggestions to my officers to answer to me to go on and do that unless they can articulate that the fact that they could hear them, they were a distance, you know, there was a noise, you know, they were on board the boat, told them to stop, they kept dumping them, stuff like that. You got that.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm 100 yards away from you and you're dumping oysters. I got nothing.
But there was, in Mob Jack 2 years ago, 3 years ago, during the public season, there were cases tried on that, and we were successful. dumping out of 5 gallon buckets, which, I mean, I don't see, if someone's going to keep small oysters, you know, whether it's an orange basket or one case that I hadn't even thought of, it was presented if they used their waste bucket to keep the small oysters and then dump them out. If they're going to dump them out, they're going to dump them out. If they're going to keep them, they're going to keep them. And
if they cull them in two piles and shovel them over when they see you coming, it's no different.
You got it both ways. Yeah. When you're wrong. The shoveling for us in the past did sharpen them up a little bit more. The two pile thing was, we understand that. I mean, we've seen it all, when it comes to that stuff. But it did make it a little bit easier for the guys. Now, I understand the basket issue for the watermen in the keeping track of the numbers, and that's, and that is a legitimate, absolutely legitimate concern for them to have. And by no means do I not take that in consideration. But when you look at the greater scheme of things, we have the inspection purposes for what we do, it was better for us when it was loose in the top. Now, however, if you're going to go to orange baskets, if that's the way, because obviously that's where everybody leaves it, if you leave it to the orange basket, then why don't we even consider the tub again? Why isn't everything like that? We got a tub and a orange basket, we changed the code and didn't address that. Some of you were involved with it. And
at the request of EMRC.
When the code got changed and the user fee came about and the per bushel tax went away, the need and use for that tub went away.
That's
and,
right. Right.
In my opinion, relieved the state of any determining of how they stay in the boat, how they go in the boat, or how they come out of the boat. That's strictly on the waterman and between him and the buyer.
But the tub stayed in. And
yeah.
The
well, Jamie, up on the tub, we don't have a limit. So if the guy comes in, he has a pile of oysters, they come with a tub.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different issue there. And you keep them loose in the pile. Most of them
are there. Yeah, I mean, they come in loose in the pile.
Right.
They don't come in baskets.
Yeah, they don't have that same issue. But if you're going to use the orange baskets, having that, I mean, the code section changed to where, we could call out of the orange basket now, but the fact that there was two different measurements and you're going to regulate for two different sizes was a problem for law enforcement.
Mm.
For the fact that it's not the exact same measurement, and everybody knows it. One is bigger than the other. And so when you use your limits and stuff like that for two different size containers, I mean, common sense will tell you that's going to create a huge problem for enforcement. And so when you see the tickets that are pushing don't match, you gotta figure out, did he have them? Did he put them in tubs, from tubs to basket to the back of the truck, which is not illegal.
So the regulations doesn't say if you have a loose in your boat, they must come out by a tub. Cull into the basket, they can remain.
You can use it. You can't
say that.
You just can't have them both. You can't have loose and in the basket at the same time.
But if they're in the basket, you have to dump them in a tub to take them off the boat.
That's what we were requested to support.
But the point is you still got two different measuring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you're over your limit in orange baskets, are you going to be over your limit in
tubs? The tub's not. Technically, the tub doesn't exist anymore.
It does for us.
Well, it doesn't in code because we changed it to 2,400 cubic inches.
Right. If it still says metallic, you can do either or. It's still, it's exactly the way it was. It never did come out. It just, you can do. That's right. You can.
It won't be in
or.
This book.
It's either or.
It's not going to be in that book, yeah, because we haven't had a tub with it. It says both. I've read the new one, and it says the tub is still in there, so it's either or. So you're giving me two different measurements with two different sizes. So if I catch somebody with, nine orange baskets, can you say, well, I tubbed them up, and it was eight tubs? Uh-huh.
How does this change that?
It doesn't change. That's what our problem is. That's created. It was created before, this year, and it's still there.
So the only thing we're addressing here is throwing a guy that dumps out
Thank you.
One more question. Jamie, if you, let's say you go aboard a boat to cull it, and you cull an orange basket, you're using, you're, I think the law in Virginia is 10%. So how does that, if you use a tub versus, which is 3,300 cubic inches, and an orange basket is 2,500 cubic inches, what do you still use the 4-quart either way?
4-quart.
Okay. Now, can that be argued in court?
I mean,
from the standpoint that you've got less cubic inches, obviously less cubic inches, you're more favorable to have.
It's definitely open Pandora's box, and the thought process wasn't brought into it to figure it out. When you can't, I don't know how you can sit and think that you can conserve for conservation purposes, for enforcement or any otherwise, have a limit on something with two completely different size containers. They should have been the exact same cubic inches.
Right.
If you wanted to put metal tub in there, it should have been whatever the orange basket is, or you know, whatever the metal tub would have was before, make the orange basket be that size. Although I know the orange baskets you buy are the size they are, and that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have two different measurements, you've got two different lengths. And so, you know, what do? We carry an orange basket and a tub on your boat when we check in now?
No.
First, if we're shoveling an orange basket, we're okay. And then if you're not okay, we got to reshovel them in a tub.
Yeah, but Jamie, what I've seen them do, I mean, they bring their tub, and they take the basket, orange basket, and they dump it in the tub, and they ask you if this, do you consider this to be a level tub? So it's up to, right, so it's up to the individual. I mean,
my frustration, this will be the third cut at this.
I mean, last year, the frustration, we had calls from you last year, and it didn't make any sense to me. Because they came in with an orange basket, everything was nice. Now, I'm against the orange basket. I've already put that on the record. I'm loose to the problem. It's better for enforcement. It always has been for conservation purposes. But if you can take that orange basket and you get the dock, you got to take the. I had guys taking it out of the orange basket, dumping it in the tub, put the orange basket down, take the tub and dump it right back in the orange basket to get it on the truck. Now, I was like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah,
the fact is, loose or tile can be put out of a basket or a tub. Right. But my point is now, get the tub out of it, and you go to the orange basket, then you need to work and get the tub out. All together. I'm not for the orange basket, but if you're going to do it, take the tub out. You won't have this conversation
anymore. My recommendation would be not to support this measure this year and come up with a third cut at the code on how we're going to correct this issue. But it's not fair to the buyers to absorb the brunt of this for the problem that we had in one geographic region. And it's not fair to the watermen that want to use the orange basket for the same reason.
I've got a question. I guess still on private ground, you can have the oysters and baskets in your boat, and there's no big deal about that. Is that correct?
You know,
it's 3,003 cubic inches in a tub, and it's 2,650 in an orange basket. Why don't you just do not a ratio and so that you can check them. I don't get it. I'm like you. I don't get it.
The ratio is a problem. And the ratio is a problem because then you got two different sizes.
But at least you have, at least you take some.
But there's no ratio for that orange basket. Well, she is what she is.
I don't understand why you can't just take them, make them, dump them into a tub and check them like that, you know, so you can continue the conservation that as it should be.
I agree. The law reads eight bushels to the man. That's either eight baskets or eight tubs. So the tub's bigger. Mm-hmm. Which one are you going with?
Mm-hmm. Robbie, you have a comment?
Yeah, just a point of thought. But those numbers sitting on this committee that sat on the committee that met before, the Code of Virginia has served Virginia very well for a long, long time. And every time it has been tweaked by members of the committee or members of the commission,
Thank you.
think the bushel tub ought to stay like it is.
Any other discussion,
we have a motion.
Comments?
I'd like to second Tom's motion.
We have a motion and a second to not adopt the culling procedures to require harvest to move to an open pile. Any more discussion on the motion?
Yeah, well, what does that mean? That means what he's still saying, he could
still use the orange basket.
Yeah. But to go back and get this thing written correctly so that it's...
Well, that's something that's going to be taken up, you know.
Yes, that's the most screwed up thing I've ever heard of.
It wasn't that bad before it got changed. No. It was pretty good job. We had very good success. Gang, I think the problem is when it comes to the bushel limit for the warming, that's why they like to cook better.
Yeah.
I said that when I started. I wasn't just cutting it. That's why I also said if you're going to take that position, get the tub out of it.
Well, Jamie, one other question. Could we, or do we limit the number of baskets on the boat to 16 or 24?
That's a conservation measure, but not,
But if you limit it to that amount and the guys dump them on the way in, the guy ends up, you know, he's normally catching 16 and he ends up with 10. Then he's dumped them on the way in. You can't prove anything other than the fact that you're going to watch him closer the next day. But perhaps he could limit the number of baskets on the boat to the number of bushels that they could catch.
I mean, that's a possibility, but once again, that's a conservation measure. And I'm not here to do the conservation. I can enforce the 16 bushels or the 24.
Right.
Whatever. You got support, and ultimately the commission does. We can count the 24 or 16, so we're okay with that. But, yes.
The guy's carrying five extra baskets, then, you know, he's carrying for a reason.
There's possibilities for that. I mean,
but
you understand the argument the other side of that, too, because the problem you're going to have with a potential problem, is just like was mentioned back there, is when you add more dredges on the bottom, you add more boats. If you add any more boats to some of the areas we had last year, it was a nightmare storm. York River, we keep talking about York River. I mean, we had to literally time when we could go into boats to get in between them to board somebody. So, I mean, it was bad because the oysters were typically on the rocks. You know, it looks like a big area, but the rocks don't cover the whole piece of ground. Mm-hmm. Everybody was right on one spot. And we had, when it started out, there was about 15 boats, and then within 2 days it got to 40 boats. Within 5 days it was about 70 boats. Mm-hmm. And I do believe they were trying to get in a spot big as this room. It was tight for us to board. I mean, we literally had to wait till the day was over sometimes for safety purposes. So limiting the bushels is a conservation measure, but if you want to talk about the law enforcement side of it, if it adds any more boats and dredges on the bottom, we might have an issue. We got to help.
So what I mean is if one boat has supposed to, if he's going to catch two guys, he's going to catch 16 bushels. He can't have 20 baskets on the boat. He can only have 16 baskets. Now, he can fill half of those with small oysters if he wants to. But, you know, if he comes in and he's worked his time, he's in at 10 o'clock, and he comes in with, you know, 12 bushels, then something's happened to the four that he dropped on the way in because he saw you sitting on the dock.
That's a clue, yes. And we take that in consideration in our patrols. We do observe, our officers are very observant and document everything, so they know what's going on. I mean, we've seen it last year in York River. We would check a boat, and there would be 15 or 20 boats in that area, and then when we would leave that boat, go to the other boats, they would have close to their limit, and the other boats, when we go to them, they'd have like one bushel. So we were literally trying to get them off as quick as they could while we were right there filling up. And we couldn't focus. Officer safety doesn't allow us to do the cull where we're at, dealing with everything else, and then also watch everything else that's going on the other boats. We have to centralize. We can't decentralize on the boards.
Mr. Chairman, could I amend my amendment to include what's carried to the commission that a work group, and at the request of this committee, Mr. Officer Green be included to rectify this issue for another year? I don't want my motion to be written that I just want to drop, not approve this and just drop it. I would like to not approve this and carry forward some sort of work group to address this issue. That nothing personal.
Who was the second? Do you accept it? Okay. Any other discussion?
So this is still going to be two different things that you can check. It can't be lumped into just a tub.
For this year.
For this year.
And figure this out, how to.
I'll look at it when it's going to the commission. I don't look at it now because I can't do the hypothetical. I got to keep what's coming out of this.
All you got to do is bring yourself about the basket, your problem.
This is a Maryland tub.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, all those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I abstain. I don't like this.
One abstention, one no, and. Okay, motion passes.
Let me mention our internal workings, if you don't know it. We have a regulatory review committee. Captain Brew is on Habitat Administration, Finance, and Fisheries. And this was one of the first issues we had 2 years ago that really got pretty wound up in that committee. It's the RFS, and I'm sure the commissioner is going to want us rather than when you see something the committee does and then it ends up at the commission differently or it doesn't. And I'm not saying either way, but this will be sort of eventually it's going to be a unified position coming out about whether to stay with the orange baskets or not. I think it helps to have the one-year study committee as part of it. But I think you probably know what we've been doing here probably for internal review committee of all our regulations and everything
goes in. I'd like to add one thing just so people are aware of it. But I think when all this stuff started a number of years ago, we had a plastic box that we used to use that was 3,003 cubic inches that had the lids that filled over top of it, and that's what we used to keep our oysters in it, and that's the way I bought them from everybody. That's how I paid them for my ground. And not only that, a mold could be made to make those orange baskets where they would be 3,003 cubic inches, and with the huge quantity of baskets that are used throughout the state, that mold probably could be done pretty easily by somebody, to take advantage of it. And it's just food for thought. I know we had a plastic box. I can't remember who we were buying them from, but it was 3,003 cubic inches because we looked around everywhere to find one.
Anybody else have final comments, concerns, questions? Anything else, Jim? Meeting's adjourned, 8:15.
It's been 2:30.